Quit. Team Never Quit. Team Never Quit Radio.
You ever think about quitting?
It's the combat of life hammering the snot out of you.
Well, stand by, dig in deep, and get ready to get fired up with us.
Welcome to the Team Never Quit podcast, the number one podcast that inspires you to fight on. I'm your host, David Rutt Rutherford, here with Mr. Never Quit himself, Marcus Luttrell.
Our mission is to help you embrace the suck of life, to teach you the values of working your ass off, and to interview the most hard-charging people on planet Earth.
We know life is hard. It's time for you to suck it up, Buttercup, and let us teach you to persevere in every environment imaginable by sharing real-world lessons learned by those who never quit. That's right. It's time, Marcus, for us to help them defeat the negative insurgency in their lives.
You fire me up. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Let's roll.
Let's roll.
Marcus.
Back again.
Yes, we are. By the grace of God and the powers that be.
And we have one of our own with us today.
And we do, which is always a particular pleasure.
It is. I mean, just hearing the stories that come out of the guy when we're in the fraternity doing all that, and then once when we separate, kind of got our legs back underneath us to see what direction guys run in. No pun intended on this one, because this guy's another one of our ultra runners, right? Yeah.
Because he is a runner, and he's one hell of a runner. He's one of these guys that just goes on forever, kind of like you.
I'm going to run my mouth forever.
No, but seriously, like somebody, well, of course, with our show, Goggins comes to mind right off the top. Far as ultra running and just feats of ridiculous endurance.
Every day is something. I mean, and that's not even his profession. You know, on the side, he's a firefighter. You know, and my brother and Josh, man, they ran those ultras. All those team guys that ran those ultras, man, it's just hardcore. It takes it to a completely different level.
Mojo, what was that Western States that they...
They did. He ran the Leadville.
Leadville,
yeah.
That's the one. Yeah. Guys are always getting, you know, I actually trained, my brother was an ultra runner for a while, and I trained to do one of these. I actually got called up to go do some stuff for work and didn't get to, but let me tell you what, the in my opinion, the worst part of it is the training for it.
Oh.
It's the hundreds of miles you run to train to run the, say, 100 miles.
Exactly, and then when you get to the end, that's why you do the run, because you've done all the training.
Yeah, and I didn't even get to do that part. So...
Man, it can be brutal.
It's
pavement.
A time-consuming event to train for.
Yeah, trying to kick the mess out of the pavement.
But anyways, our guest, which you're gonna absolutely love, is Chad Wright, and we'll get into him in a minute. But let's do a little housekeeping first, huh?
You got it. All right, you guys, this is how you listen to us. You can stream us directly from our website at tnqpodcast.com or virtually any other podcast app on your iPhone or your Android. We got iTunes, Stitcher, Podyssey, CastBox, and Radio Public.
All right, and if you're into social media, if you go in for that sort of thing, follow Team Never Quit. Start out there. Any major social media platform, you're going to find us. On Instagram, though, you can go. You can follow the show here, TNQ Podcast. You can follow Marcus at Marcus Luttrell. You can follow me at the_wizard_TNQ.
Or you can just type in tnqpodcast.com and listen to us directly. We have everyone from David Goggins to Mike Rowe, Missy Franklin, Dakota Meyer, Mark Wahlberg, and Sir Robert Young Pelton, just to name a few. We also have merchandise, t-shirts, and hats are in. And one of our favorite things that we have on the website for us and the listeners are the listener write-in stories. It's really the best way that we can show our audience to our audience when they write in those personal never quit stories, and they inspire so many. So you can find those or submit your own under the menu tab at Share Your Story.
And it's such a, it's such a great demonstration of the community right there. And we have hundreds of stories, people writing in every day. It's actually quite a lot of work to keep up with, honestly.
Yeah, it's great. Rewarding.
And anybody that's familiar with the show knows that we always try to put a reader story at the end of it. So without further ado, let's talk about Chad Wright real quick. Super interesting guy. He's a good old boy from Northern Georgia.
he first got into running, actually. The story is that his mother was a triathlete, and apparently Chad wanted a backpack or something like this, and his mother made him a deal that, well, if you keep up with me on a run, then I'll get you this backpack, and that's where he said it all started for him. He, many years later, in 2006, he first joins the U.S. Navy, and there's a whole story behind that. They end up discovering a pericardial cyst on his heart, and that DQ'd him. It's not a waiverable. That is not a waiverable thing, and DQ'd him from SEAL training. However, he comes back and he gets through it. And there's a lot more to say about that, but I'm sure he'll get into it. He has a hell of a career on the East Coast. And in 2019, he is medically retired. He gets into running. He's done, at this point, like, you know, we said, he's an ultra runner. He's done some incredible events thus far. He's done the Cruel Jewel. He's done a whole bunch of other ultras here in the United States. He's done the Revenant, which is...
Just the name of the races lets you know that it's hard, right? I mean, they name like that on purpose.
The Revenant. And I had to look this one up. It was actually part of an article that was written about it. The Revenant takes place in New Zealand. It is the answer to the Barkley Marathons, which I didn't know the history of them, but they take place in Tennessee, out in the mountains over there. The Barkley Marathons, by the way, took 10 years for anybody even to complete.
Wow. Okay?
They started in 1986. Well, the Revenant is similar to that. It, to this day, has no one who has completed it. It is 200 kilometers over four laps on Blackmore Station. This is out there in New Zealand, like I said, south of Lake Wanapamaki. No, it's not. It's a word I can't pronounce. It starts with a W.
It's not good, though.
But it's got over 16,000 meters in total of elevation gain. 14 checkpoints. There's... on each lap to complete the course, 60 hours to finish, absolutely unassisted, no GPS support crews, not even a watch, just a map and compass. They don't even use trails.
Oh.
It's just...
Go?
Yeah, you're going over open ground, which anybody who gets out there knows...
That's rough. I've been there.
Exponentially more difficult.
It's tough.
Well, I learned the appreciation for that in Kodiak, Alaska. Mm.
And,
oh, that was a hell of an experience. Okay, anyways... He goes out and does the Revenant, and spoiler alert, he failed. But he's come back way stronger, and he's going to explain some of that too, I'm sure. Even to the point where he has designed his own race. It is called It is called Bob's Big Timber Backyard Ultra. Say that 10 times fast. Marcus, right? Go.
Man, I can't even say it, much less run it.
Obviously, neither did I. And I'm reading it. Bob's Big Timber Backyard Ultra. It is a last man standing ultra in which they run every hour. You have to do, it's like 4.1, 4.2 miles.
Oh.
And this goes on for 24 hours. But most likely, it's going to go on beyond 24 hours. It will go until the last man standing, which means... it could go on endlessly as long as you're capable of running 4.1 miles. And what's really interesting about this is every one of these hours is named for, obviously Chad being a Navy SEAL.
Yeah. One of our fallen.
There's a lot of focus on our particular fallen, but it's not exclusively limited to that. But, that brings on a whole new meaning to, the purpose behind what they're doing, which is super exciting. I'm ready to talk. I'm just ready to hear him talk.
Let's do it, man. Let's get him on. Yep, absolutely.
Let's do it, bud.
So, here he is. We've got him on the line, y'all. Chad Wright.
He makes me tired just thinking about what he does.
That's not one of those guys. Chad Wright. Thanks for coming on the show, brother.
What's up, buddy?
Not much, fellas. It's an honor to be on with you guys. Can't thank you enough for having me as a guest.
Fantastic. Where are you calling us from?
I'm out in Suffolk, Virginia, man.
Oh, you're still so, back on the East Coast. All right.
Yeah, just outside of Virginia Beach. So, beautiful day today. A little windy, but sunshine.
And it is beautiful here, too. Weather is, it's one of those perfect weather days.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, grass is growing, man. Went out and bought a new lawnmower today, so
what'd you get? Let's hear that.
I went with the Skag.
Why?
I don't know, man. They've got a 15% military discount.
Oh, that's primary. Okay, check.
It's all about maintaining. Luckily, I had a Skag dealer right down the road from the house. So, mm-hmm. I got blessed with that. And I think it's good equipment, all American made. So, I'm going to give it a shot, man.
That's what they call. I'm the groundskeeper around here, bro. All I do is get on that. My wife says I'm out in the pasture with the bull because I'm on that Toro mower just doing laps nonstop, clearing my head. Hey, it's,
man,
awesome.
It's therapeutic, it, man, is. And that's me, dude. I started a little lawn care business just for fun. I've got 10 acres out here in Suffolk, but I started this little lawn care business just for fun. And it's almost like I've just came full circle, man, and getting back to my roots. And it's just real therapeutic for me. And it's hilarious because I've made $500 a day for the last 2 weeks. And I'm just
awesome.
Like, it's funny to me. You know what I mean? Because I'm enjoying it. So.
I do. That's how I've had my way through college and through most of it. Before I came into the Navy and had a lawn business, man. I just love being out there. And I love seeing the end product. Nothing better after you cut the grass and it rains, and then the sun comes back up on top of that, the way that smells and everything comes to life, there's just something about living out on enough property to have that experience. Something.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
What? Why are you looking at me like, I got the weird face? Look at all your face.
These fucking guys geeking out about mowing the grass.
Tell you, man, just get out there on one of those mowers and go after it. You'll see.
Oh, that's a whole new podcast. You guys just hook up and do a podcast about mowing.
It's like a race car or a tank thing, man. Just tearing the hell out of everything you run over. And at the end of it, there's just a pattern.
Chad and Marcus on the turf. There's a future in that right there.
Yeah. Oh, we already have one. We're already together, wizard. All right, brother. Here's what we're going to do before we start into this. And thank you again for coming on the show. We like to hear people and their amazing stories and kind of tie all that together. And before we do that, though, we start out with a mad minute. It's kind of like getting your brain all loosened up before we get into the deep stuff. So we're going to fire some questions at you. There's nothing, just us on the phone.
Roger that. Let's do it, Marcus.
All right, man. If not when the zombie apocalypse hits, what are your three most indispensable pieces of kit?
I'm gonna say definitely my 1994 Toyota pickup truck.
Last to anything,
Toyota quality.
Last to anything,
I got two of them myself.
I'm gonna have to say my old Ruger 10/22 rifle and a pocket full of bullets.
Again, reliability.
And then, I'd probably take a few of my hound dogs with me too, man. A few of my coon hounds, because they got the dog box in the back of the truck. So I'd have to bring a few of them along with me too, man.
What are you going to do with the dogs? And how are they going to help you?
Well, they're pretty tough, man. And, for one, they can provide food. You know, coon's good eating, man. Coon and possum's good eating. So, when the grocery stores are all wrecked, we're going to be able to eat. And then we might be able to work them to run the zombies down and protect us in that way, too. So
having a great dog around, especially if you're the only one left.
That's
the dog's
it, man.
Best friend, man. I've been running around with him forever.
I can't leave my dogs behind, man. No. I mean, it's just came to me.
Well, it sounds like you got a foolproof plan there that could never fail. Jesus Christ. Marcus, hit him with another one.
All right, brother. Favorite movie character you like to play out in real life?
I'm going to say Jeremiah Johnson, Marcus.
That's a good one. I hadn't seen that in a while.
And why?
Man, just, I don't know, just the story of Jeremiah when he's out there on his own, doing his own thing. Back in the day when there was big country left and there was still land left to explore, that's always really appealed to me, because now everything's pretty much been seen and there's not much left to really explore here on this earth other than the ocean. But
well, this is going to come as a major surprise to all our listeners, but Chad actually comes from northern Georgia, isn't that right?
That's exactly right. Yeah,
that's something to do with
born and raised in Northwest Georgia, man. And
your fascination with Jeremiah Johnson.
This accent, this accent stuck with me all my life, man, and I can't seem to shake it. So we're going to roll with it,
well,
brother.
No need to shake it. All right. If you could call yourself, who is 15 years in the future, what would you ask yourself? Anything.
15 years in the future. First thing comes to my head, I would ask myself how my wife was doing. She's a person I love her the most, more than anyone else in the world. So it's the first thing that comes to my head.
How long y'all been together? That's a wise man right there.
Brooke and I have been together for about 6.5 years now, I guess. So
yeah, I got me one of them too. Like best thing ever. Like the best gift ever, man. It's the coolest thing. Once you add that one into the mix, everything just is easy day.
Amen to that, bro.
There's not another hard day when you got one on your side.
Yes, sir.
Is she into running as well?
Brooke, she does a little bit of running. She actually did her first 50K, which is about 31 miles.
Did you hear that relative statement right there? He's like, she does a little bit of running.
Yeah.
50K here and there.
I think it's up like to the mailbox or something. Right. I was waiting for like a joke.
Keep going.
That was it. Yeah, that was in March, and that was a mountain race, and she actually did really well. So, she's not quite as, into it as I am, but she enjoys it, man.
All right.
Best piece of advice you give off the top of your head.
Oh, man.
That's a big ask right there.
That's tough, Marcus. Off the top of my head, man, what immediately comes to mind is that Bible verse that whom the Son sets free is free indeed. And and to me, that was my way to freedom, man, was Jesus Christ. And just those words right there, whom the Son sets free is free indeed. And I think there's so many people in the world that I know that are searching for that freedom, man, from whatever it may be. He's the one thing that can truly set you free,
Oh man, so, amen to that, brother. And you're not even rolling till you're rolling with him.
That's it, man. Yep. And that's just the first thing that popped into my head when you asked me that, man.
Well, Marcus had to get all serious.
No, I don't care.
I'm going to have to ask you another question.
There is no way in hell you got an act. If you're rolling with that tongue and you don't have one of them hitched up in there ready to go.
Yeah, right?
All right,
hypothetically, if you had to cross Afghanistan and you have three options for transportation and accompaniment, which will you choose? To rollerblade with Chuck Norris, to take a smart car with Kim Kardashian, or an armored personnel carrier. However, it will be filled with three people infected by Ebola.
I'm about to say I'm gonna rollerblade with Chuck Norris, man. Huh? I mean, we both got the red beard going on. Feel like we could have a good time, man.
Plus, it's Chuck Norris. He just puts the rollerblades on, and the earth goes under him. So then
right, brother.
I think that's how that would go.
He's gonna be well armed too, didn't he? I saw he just got. He's now the spokesman for Glock.
Oh, is he?
You see that?
Chuck is?
I think that's true. Yeah. Well, anyways, that's probably the best choice. I think I'm with you on that. Without a mop level 5 to keep that Ebola back.
No doubt about that, man.
All right, what's your favorite dive bar?
Favorite dive bar? Shoot, we're just going to go with the Brass Bell here in Virginia Beach, man.
Yep. That's an old standby. I'm an East Coast guy. Myself.
Gotcha. Yeah. We had our hunt club meeting there the other night. Had a good time, man. It's a pretty cool environment. It's changed a little bit in the last few years, but it's still good to go.
Yeah, I haven't been in there for quite a few years, but all right. If you were going to be hogtied, locked in a closet for 30 minutes with one of the following, which would you choose? 5 water moccasins or a chimpanzee with a hand grenade and a hyperactive sense of curiosity?
I have to go with 5 water moccasins, man.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm pretty used to being around the water moccasins. You know how the swamps and stuff are out here in Tidewater, Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
I feel right at home with them. See them all the time.
Man, we got those here too, man. You know, it's part of the mamba family. I didn't know that until I went to Africa to hunt. And it's just it's the water mamba. It's the black mamba version, all them nasty something they got over there. Somehow, some way, that sucker got over here. You know how aggressive they are. I mean, even if you shoot at them, what's up, man? I've been chased off the pond. By them suckers, dude. And
They're tough, man. Tough. We call them cottonmouth.
Yeah, cottonmouth. Yeah, mm-hmm. Cottonmouth.
Yeah, that's what we call them.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, that was the mad minute, or unless you got one more for
me. No, let's get right.
That was a mad minute, and thank you for participating. That was a lot of fun and probably the most educational and informative portion of this entire interview. God, I hope not, but that might be the truth. as entertaining as that is, our mission here really is front and center in our name, Team Never Quit Podcast, and that mentality. So the listeners come, I think they come for personal reasons to either be inspired, to learn a lesson, to basically just get the after action report on somebody who's gone through a story of great perseverance and endurance. They've suffered through something and came out the other side, and they hope to take away something from that and use it in their own lives. So without any further ado, if you could share with us your greatest never quit story or string of stories, you have the floor.
Roger that, man. It'd be my pleasure. So, you know, I guess I'll start it out with the weird thing about, about the way life works is it seems like every time I've ever been on the cusp or on the verge of a big transition or, you know, moving forward to something better, it's always preceded by adversity, you know, or you know, I call mm-hmm. it the furnace of adversity or the fire, you know what I mean? And mm-hmm. so you'll notice as I go through this is each one of these circumstances in my life, you know, I'm right on the verge of breaking through, breaking new ground into something new and better making myself better than I was before. But I had to go through that fire first. That really that fire just purifies, you know, your intentions and your will and your why. Mm. And I feel like you come out the other end and you can't be fake when you've been through that fire and when you finally reach that position or that goal that you were trying, that you were striving for, you're not fake when you get there. So, you know, I've learned to really appreciate it and I've learned the value of it. And kind of just to embrace it and expect it, when I see something on the horizon that I want to strive for, you know. And I guess the first time that I can really remember experiencing a never quit moment as an adult mm-hmm. was when I decided I wanted to join the Navy. First of all, I wanted to be a SEAL. I grew up in a little small town in North Georgia.
And why the man, hell did you want to do something like that?
Man, I was a
damn fool. Yeah, no,
oh, we all say that at least one time. You know, the team guys here. I'm like, I've rattled that. I'm like, whoa, what were we thinking?
Yeah, I've been asked that question a lot of times. Is, you know, why would you want to do that, or you know, what made you decide, you know, coming from that small town and, you know, just being just your normal old country boy, you know, out in the woods and doing your thing. Made you decide you wanted to be a SEAL, and I, the best way I can answer that is it goes back to my mother, because she's dedicated her entire life to serving others, and she always encouraged us to be outside, and you know, she was a big time triathlete, so she had a lot of influence on me when it came to that. But anyhow, when I decided I wanted mm-hmm. to be a SEAL, first of all, most people laughed at me, you know, because I never played sports. I never did anything really special. Mm-hmm. I had never swam in a swimming pool before. The first time I had ever swam in a swimming pool was when I went to take my PST, and you know, a lot of people just kind of laughed it off and thought it was a joke. And you know, kind of what I learned there was you know, when you set a goal for yourself and you know, you're just getting started out, you got to be careful who you talk to about it. You want to kind of be careful who you tell about it. You only want to tell people that are going to provide that encouragement that you need, you know. So I went to Navy boot camp, and I graduated Navy boot camp, was getting ready to go to Buds. And I was diagnosed by the dive medical officer with a condition called a pericardial cyst. And Marcus, I know you know what the pericardial sac is around the heart. I've heard you speak about it before. And this is a rare condition. There are not very many cases of it. And the funny thing about it is it's asymptomatic, at least in my case. It was about a 7-centimeter cyst on my heart. But I would have never known it was there if it wouldn't have been for the dive physical. So the Navy basically comes back to me and says, look, man, you've got this cyst on your heart. Sorry, you know, you can't be a SEAL. You can't go to Buds. We're going to send you to the fleet, basically. And so what that did is, you know, basically I had my dreams, everything that I had planned on and everything that I had aspired to be, it was all stripped from me in that one moment. Mm-hmm. And there was nothing that I could do to change it. And when I left home in Georgia, you know, I gave my truck away to my brother, and, you know, I left everything, man. I didn't have anything back home. But I knew I didn't want to go to fleet because I had made my mind up. I wanted to go to Buds. Mm-hmm. You know, that's where I'd set my goal. So the Navy put me in a temporary processing unit. It was basically like being in prison for about 2 months. Whole time I'm in there,
that's the whole reason we want to go to the ship or anything like that, man. I want to go this way. I don't want to do that over there, man. You get stuck in those. I'm sorry. Go ahead, man. I just remembered that.
Yeah, no, it was tough, man. So, you know, I was in there freaking, not only do they say, hey, man, you know, we're taking your dream away. You can't be a SEAL. But you know, and you have a cyst on your heart, but we're going to sit you in here and let you wash windows for the next 2 months. And, so that's what I did for 2 months. That entire time, I got really angry. I got real angry. I really started to really harden my heart, man.
Angry in what way? Like angry at the Navy, angry at yourself, angry at what?
Well, one, I was angry at the Navy for basically locking me in this prison is how I viewed it. I was angry, you know, just at the circumstance, and I wasn't a Christian at that point, so I wasn't angry at God. It was just the circumstance of, you know, hey, why is this happening to me? And, you know, all my classmates, they're off to, you know, go give it a shot. And here I am, you know, basically felt like a loser. And so this whole time, my mother actually contacted our congressman and coordinated some efforts to get me basically an administrative discharge, so I didn't have to go out to the fleet. So I get this administrative discharge and I get back home to Georgia, and I was still really angry. I didn't have anything. I show back up in my same hometown that I had left, you know, 6 months ago, and everybody that's, you know, all my old friends and so-called friends, and everybody sees me and they're like, hey, man, you know, they all think that I'm a failure. And I'm sitting here, you know, trying to explain to them, like, oh, no, I actually have this thing wrong with my heart. Mm-hmm. And, of course, they just think that I'm making up a story. You know what I mean? Right. So, but right. I'll tell you what's funny, man, is I never completely let go of that dream to be a SEAL. Like, even though it was taken from me and even though everyone told me that it would never be a possibility, for some reason – I never let it go, man. And And when I got back home, it was in 2007, kind of right in the middle of that that depression and, you know, that the economic collapse. And my father was in the construction industry. And I came back home, man, and my family, they didn't have anything, man. We didn't have health insurance. We didn't know how I could go to a doctor to see about having this thing removed. And, you know, there was just, it was basically like, well, how do we, what do we do? You know, how do we move forward? And the weird thing is none of that mattered to me. The day I got back home, I started training again that very day to go back into the Navy and continue to pursue my dreams. And I don't know where that came from, man, because I wasn't reading any self-help books, or I didn't really have any mentors or anything like that. It was almost, I just can't explain it. But from day one, I said, okay, no matter what's in front of me, I'm going to start training today to go back and pursue my dreams, right? And so that's what I did. And we finally were able to, with help of some friends and family, we were able to get some health insurance for me. And I was able to go and start seeing some doctors. And I went to about three different heart surgeons. And every surgeon I went to, they would say, hey, man, this is an asymptomatic condition. Why do you want to risk a complicated heart surgery for something that's not causing you any issues? And they couldn't understand it, and they wouldn't touch it. They wouldn't take this cyst off my heart. Well, finally, I found a surgeon there in Atlanta. His name's Dr. Cooper. He won't mind me using his name. And he understood the reason that I wanted to have this surgery done, because I wanted my dreams back, you know. So I finally lined this surgery up with Dr. Cooper. I only remember ever having one real moment of weakness through this whole time period, and it was when I was on the way to the hospital the morning of the surgery. It was like 4:30 in the morning. And I had a moment where I was just like, man, this is like, this could potentially be life ending or life changing when I go lay on this operating table. And I asked my dad was driving the car. I said, Dad, you know, should I really go through with this? And he just looked at me and said, son, if you want to be a SEAL, he said, you have no choice. And it was like that little piece of encouragement was just like, you know, I just looked at him and I was basically like, Roger that, let's do it, man. And so I get to the operating room, and it's awesome. Dr. Cooper comes in the operating room that morning, 5 o'clock. He's got his running clothes on. He's just coming off a run, you know, and I'm like, all right, this is the dude I want freaking operating on me. This freaking motivated guy, you know?
Right.
And he takes this cyst off my heart. And one thing that's cool is Dr. Cooper did his part of the surgery for completely free, no cost. He didn't tell us any of that up front. We just never received a bill for it.
No kidding.
Yeah, I mean, that's just, how amazing is that, man?
That's amazing.
So Dr. Cooper removes the cyst from my heart, and the surgery was successful. And I remember the first thing I said when I woke up from surgery, my grandmother was standing beside me. And I looked over and I grabbed her hand and I said, I got my dreams back. And man, it was like from that point forward, like nothing was going to stop me. Like it's that fire. Like I said, you know, I'll be totally honest with you, man. If I would have went to Bud's the first time without going through that fire, I don't know if I would have made it through. I don't know what would have happened. You know, but after going through that hard time, it was like, it's on now, man. You know, it had really purified my intentions of why I wanted to go do this. And it really showed me how much I wanted this thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I start training, you know, a couple weeks after surgery, and going to, you know, go back into the Navy, less than a year after surgery, and, was actually went and saw the same dive medical officer that disqualified me less than a year before. And I'll never forget the look on his face when I walked into his office.
Did he remember you?
He remembered exactly who I was. And, you know, all this stuff about this pericardial cyst, it's such a rare condition and they've never seen it before in a SEAL candidate. This is all published online. It's all public information. You can go and read about it yourself.
Huh.
So yeah, he totally remembered me, and he just, like, his jaw dropped when I walked back in the office, like, what are you doing back here, man?
So, that's what I was going to ask you, though, is I was wondering what you'd say when you got done with that story. Do you think that you would have made it through without going through back through this trial, back through that furnace?
The honest answer is no. The honest answer is no. I do not think that I would have made it through training. And that's just me being totally honest, man. So, you know, at the end of the day, it was, you know, all that whole situation was a blessing at the end of the day, even though I couldn't see it in the moment. Couldn't see how that was going to turn out to be a blessing. But, you know, moving forward from there, obviously I went through training, no issues, you know, just rolled right through because I had been through that adversity prior to.
Mm-hmm.
So I rolled right through training, man. But, you know, and then moving on from there, I go and get back from my second deployment, and I kind of start. I get saved on my second deployment, actually. So that, mm-hmm. that was an amazing experience for me. And I come home. So I'm recently saved, and, you know, I'm launching into this new way of life, you know, it's so awesome. It feels so good.
Mm-hmm.
And I finally have this new direction in life and a relationship with God. And I get back to the house, and my wife is in active addiction. And now I've got my wife's permission to tell the story. This is her story, but I'll tell my side of it with her permission.
Right before you launch into that, though, can you just give us a little background on why you went through, you know, discovering Christ and becoming saved, like you said, becoming more religious? What drew you to that? Was there a need that you felt? Or
I don't really know if you would call it a need. It was more or less a series of experiences that I had. You know, looking back on it, what really initiated it was, I was overseas, and I was staying with a couple of friends of mine in our, whatever you want to call it, our barracks or, mm-hmm. or whatever we were living. And, one of my buddies, a fellow brother, team guy, he decided that he would start up a little Bible study, a weekly deal. And, you know, I was pretty bored at the time, and I thought, well, I'm going to go sit and listen to this dude talk, you know, and start going and attending this Bible study. And it sounds absolutely crazy, man, but when he started doing that, some weird stuff started happening in the place we were staying, like some freaky stuff. There was some kind of presence there. There was some kind of, I don't know. I mean, I call it evil, but, it was really, and what's funny is it's like his little Bible study really initiated it and brought that evil out into the open. And, it got so freaky, man, that it came to the point, it was me and three other dudes staying in this building, and we were all sleeping in the same room together after about a week and a half.
Wait a minute, you're talking about like paranormal activity?
Yeah, man. Like
doors slamming, like really, and footsteps in the night, and
Ezekiel, like, and Jeremiah.
really oppressive type, like evil presence, man. And you,
like what?
When you walked
in, specifically, like what?
When you walked into this place, well, first, how it started was I was actually laying in my rack one night, and freaking something hits the dang door of my room, and it wakes me up, it jolts me awake, and then I could hear something. It was almost like singing or something up and down the hallways of the building we were in. And I get up and I look, nobody's there, and check my buddy's room. Nobody, you know, everybody's passed out. And that was the initial thing that I remember. And then the other guys that were with me started experiencing similar things to that in their, you know, in their own rooms, and you know, the time they were spending there. And, and it got to the point where it was like, there was just such a, it was just like an oppressive, like evil thing that was like bearing down on all of us, our moods, our thoughts, everything. It's so hard to explain because It sounds like a freaking ghost story, but it was so real in the moment.
What it sounds like.
And
this thing was irritated, you're saying, by having the, you know, this Bible study, you think?
Yeah, that's the only way that I can explain it, Wizard. And you know there's something to it when you got freaking four grown men, Navy SEALs, yeah, sleeping in the freaking same room together at the end of a week and a half. And finally, man, I got sick of it, and I reached out to my brother, and my brother is a Christian, and said, "Look, man, this is what's going on, and I don't know what to do, but we can't freaking sleep at night." And he says, "Well, let me put you in touch with my pastor." He puts me in touch with his pastor, and I put his pastor on speaker, and I walk all around this building and up and down the halls and in every room, and his pastor prays over this building, and I had never really prayed before, so I didn't know how to do it. And immediately after that, it all stopped, and like there was peace. That peace returned to that place, and we could rest easy. And that's what made me realize, wow, there must be something to this.
There's a power there, huh?
There's a power there. That's right. And so I started. I started taking it a little more seriously, you know, and I started digging into God's word and learning how to pray myself. And, throughout, that was that pretty much the beginning of the deployment. And then throughout the rest of that deployment, God kept revealing himself to me in so many different situations and circumstances. Over and over again, and they all compounded on themselves and strengthened my belief and my faith in God. So by the end of that deployment, it was like, man, I was rock solid, dude. Like I was all in, dude. Yeah. And so, I get back home and like my wife is literally like, she should have been dead. Like she was walking that thin line, you know, on the edge, with active addiction. And
did this exist before you left, this addiction or substance abuse or
propensity to it? I'll tell you what, and yeah, substance abuse. And I'll tell you what, Wizard, I think that it probably did, but you know how it is, man, when you're running and gunning, you're in a platoon. Yeah. You're gone 300 days out of the year, man. And, you know, I would come home on the weekend, and if I noticed a little something off, I wouldn't mention it because I was leaving in a day, you know? So how am I going to confront her about anything and then just have to leave it hanging while I'm gone for another 2 months? You know what I mean?
You just want to try to make the most of that moment while you're there and try to leave it on the best terms as possible. Yeah, I get that. Sure.
That's right, man. So, but yeah, when I finally got home, it had gotten to the point where it could no longer be ignored. It was all out in the open. It was literally a life and death struggle, for her at that point. And you know, there's a lot of you want to talk about never quit. You watch somebody go from active addiction to clean. You watch them through that journey. Man, that is a never quit journey right there. It was unbelievable to see her go through that. It was tough, but at the end state was unbelievable. And there's a huge argument out there now, you know, is addiction a choice or is it a disease? Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm going to tell you, I've walked through it with the person I love the most, and it may in some cases start out as a choice. It might, in some cases it doesn't. In some cases it's a 14-year-old girl that goes and has her wisdom teeth pulled, and you know, she takes this pill and then it gets control of her. You know what I mean? But it eventually becomes a disease, something that's completely out of their control. I didn't know what to do. There was nothing that I could do to change her or to make her want to quit and live. There was nothing I could do or say. I was completely helpless.
Jesus, I can't imagine coming back after deployment to that, particularly where you're on this high of this whole new phase of life that you've stepped into and probably excited about that. And you come back to, you just plunged right into it. You're back in that furnace again.
That's it. That's it, man. Right back into that furnace, man, right there on the verge of that awesome new life, of that rebirth. But guess what? God's going to take me through the fire again. And this time he's bringing my wife with me, you know.
That's how you make it a team. You know, we're in the SEAL teams, are forged in fire. We have to do it with our spouses too. You know what I mean?
Yep.
That's why they're our spouses. Because if they're going to roll with this kind of fire, I mean, they'd be able to handle it. And that goes both ways. So we all have a sin tucked inside of us, man. If you just so happen to marry up to the opposite of you that carries that same sin, especially if you like to abuse it, woo, stand by, man. That's one hell of a rodeo. The trick is catching one that has the opposite of you, so they balance each other out. I mean, and even, you know, in the buddy, always swim buddies, we're trained like that. We always have to have that one that we gravitate towards, so when we get in trouble, misery loves company. Yeah. Right,
or gasoline on the fire. Yeah. So take us on the road to the bottom, back to, you know, recovery and whatever, you know, comes after that.
Yeah. So I didn't know what to do, man. Like, I had never experienced this before. I never knew anybody that was in active addiction. We didn't even know where to, first of all, she had to make the decision, you know, for herself. But all I knew how to do at that point was to pray, dude. And that's all I knew. That's all that I could do. And this goes on for probably, I don't know, 2 months after I had been back home. And one night, she comes to me. We're actually out on Chicks Beach, out on the beach, and I think it was actually her birthday. And just out of the blue, she comes to me and says, "Hey, I want to be clean." And I knew in that moment that God had healed her, or was going to heal her. And she made, but she, you know, she listened to God, and she listened to that calling, and she made that decision for herself. And yeah, we walked hand in hand through that whole process, man. And it's a confusing process, and it was hard for me and hard for her too.
So did you have any support outside of just you, and obviously your wife's going through this? You were just trying to weather this whole storm yourselves?
I tell you what, Wizard, everybody around me that I spoke to, including every member of my family, told me to quit. Every single one of them said, "Why in the hell are you staying with her?
Really?
You know, what are you doing? And it was that bad. I mean, it was bad.
It must have been.
All but one person. There was one person who spoke truth into my life. And I think that's the reason that I made it through this fire and that my wife and I are still together today. And that was my little brother. I remember calling my little brother one day and I said, man, I don't know if I can do this anymore. I said, man, this is awful, man. Not only going through this, but watching her go through it. It was awful, brother. And my brother said, look, Chad, he said, she's your wife. She said, you don't have any choice whether you want to go through this or not. Hmm. You don't have a choice in the matter. And that was the truth. That was the truth that I needed to hear. So that one statement that he told me on that one day stayed with me, and it really propelled me through this whole situation. It just took one man.
Why do you think that shot right into you when a lot of people would have said, yeah, but you know what? Everybody gets divorced. The hell with it. I'll just start over. Why did that shoot into you?
I promised before God. I mean, you can't break that one. That's kind of a whoopsie.
That's it, Marcus. Because when he said that, I knew that that was the truth. Hmm. And I knew that what everyone else was saying was a lie. But the lie would have been the easier route. So the lie looked very appealing. Mm-hmm. All the lies that everyone was telling me, they looked real appealing because that was the easiest route. But when he spoke the truth into my life, and I knew that that was the truth, because that's God's word, just like what Marcus said, there was no way I could let that go.
I get that. You know, we like to say on this show that not everything that people say reaches everybody listening to it. In fact, it doesn't work that way for any of the shows or anything anybody says. But every show has things that people say that touches certain people who hear it right in that moment, right when they're supposed to hear it, and it shoots right through them. I do believe that. That's an example of what happened to you there. Yep. It's just you had to hear that, and you heard the truth in it, right?
That's right, Wiz. There's no doubt about it, man. So that's what propelled me through it, man. And my wife, you know, by the grace of God, she got clean, man, and she's been clean now for about 6 years, and she's literally the best woman on earth, in my opinion. I mean, like I told you earlier, I love her more than anyone else in the world, and that's the crazy thing about addicts, man, is usually when they're in active addiction, you just look down on them. But then when they get clean, they're some of the smartest, most intelligent, best people on earth. And I got to see that not only through her, but through other people that we've came in contact with, you know, being a part of that circumstance.
That's a beautiful thing that you found that. That's amazing. So I think what everybody's wondering is, so what was the next furnace you decided to jump yourself into? those are two great examples right there. I mean, they really are. But I know that there's more coming up here. I mean, let's hear about it.
Well, probably, the most recent thing, Wizard, going from that time moving forward through my life is just here recently. I was medically retired from the teams.
Mm-hmm.
Man, you want to talk about a freaking tough transition, man. I know it's different for every dude, but
a lot of people have a time with that, right, Marcus?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's so crazy, man. It's like I've always appreciated being a part of the teams and sharing that brotherhood, but man, when it goes away, it's like it slaps you in the face and you realize what you had and it's not part of your life every day anymore. And yeah, I got in this rut, man, and didn't really know what to do or where to turn, what I was going to do with the rest of my life. And I've got a brother from the team, so he was my chief at my last command.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Brandon keeps freaking calling me keeps calling me, and I'm just isolating myself, dude. I don't want to talk to anybody. I'm just in a bad way. And I had just got back from the Revenant, had just got back from New Zealand, failed there. So that was like a double failure, you know, like I'd failed there, come home, the teams are gone. Brandon keeps calling me.
Just piling on.
And finally, I freaking answer the phone, man. And when I did, I was like, it was like I connected back into that brotherhood, man. And and I had this idea for the last man standing race. And we can talk about that later if you want. Oh, I had that idea. For a long time, but I didn't have the courage to pursue that idea on my own. But when I answered the phone, I worked up enough courage to ask Brandon. I said, man, I got this idea. Will you help me? Will you go with me? And he said, yeah, brother, you go do whatever's on your heart and I'll be right here with you. And I was able to lean on my brother. And he took a lot of that bad stuff off of me. And it's just amazing how powerful that moment was when he said, yeah, brother, you go, you do it. I'll be right here beside you. And that's given me the courage now to propel myself into awesome things here in the near future.
Keep it's going. Amazing how that support. Go ahead.
Keep going. I'm just.
No, it's amazing. Listen. How this is the second time the right words and encouragement has made a major difference in the path you're walking. We hear that in our guests all the time, right? It's the courage to reach out and get some support because it doesn't mean weakness. It's strength to reach out in the right way. And it's not about reaching out and complaining about things and whining and looking for excuses to quit. It's about reaching out to try to get some help and just how powerful that is and how we have an aversion to it almost because we look at it as a weakness.
Yeah.
That's how it becomes a strength. Show me what you're afraid of and I'll show you what you're made of, period.
You brought up the Revenant, and when I saw the name of that race, I didn't know what it was, so I had to look it up. And that was very interesting. And this, I think, knowing the follow-on here, and then it goes into the other race you were just referencing coming up in the near future. It makes another really furnace type of an event. Do you want to start with, you know, what is the Revenant, getting involved in that, your experience, and then carrying forward it into Bob's big backyard. You got to help me with this one.
Yeah, that's close enough. Bob's Big Timber Backyard Ultra.
Big Timber.
Lord.
Bob's Big Timber Backyard Ultra.
Yeah, yeah. So I can start off, just tell you a little bit about the Revenant. So what the Revenant is it's about a 220-kilometer race, somewhere between 200 and 220 kilometers. It's got a little over 55,000 feet of vertical ascent and descent. And the thing that's interesting about it is it's all off trail and you have to navigate the course with a map and compass only. So there's no electronic aids.
That's the worst. I didn't know it was all off course.
What's that?
I didn't know it was all off course. That makes the difficulty factor just multiply.
Yeah, really? Yeah, for sure. It takes a lot of things. A lot of things can happen that are totally out of your control. When you add that aspect into a race, you basically navigate through a series of checkpoints along this 50-kilometer loop, and you do four loops. and that's out in New Zealand on the South Island. Beautiful country, man, but very harsh country. Really, really tough environment to move through. And what appealed to me about this race was there was a high chance of failure.
Well, tell them how many people have actually successfully completed the race.
Yeah, no one's ever finished the race.
Right. Yeah, that's why we're doing this.
Precisely zero.
That's it, man.
That's all that's you had it. To say, man.
So the thought crossed my mind.
Yeah, I'll be your medic, bro.
Jesus.
So, yeah, man, and that really appealed to me, man, because we do all this awesome stuff in our career, and most of us, you know, are able to make it out the other end. And something that I could potentially fail, that's what appealed to me most about the race. It wasn't the location, it wasn't any specific aspect. It was just the fact that I might not finish. And mm-hmm. of course I still thought in my own head that I was going to finish. So yeah, I went out there, and the first night we started about 11 o'clock at night, and an inversion layer had moved in, and the fog was so thick you literally couldn't see your hand in front of your face. Your headlamp just reflects off the fog, you know, uh-huh. and you could basically see your feet, and the way the ground was sloped that you were standing on, and the only way you could navigate was just dead reckoning following a bearing. So, yeah, we went out there. We were on course for uh-huh. about 31 hours. I have no clue how much distance we covered, but ended up not completing that race. And that was a gut check, dude.
I guess. I imagine you didn't give up very easily. What I said, 31 hours. You don't know how far you went. What were the other competitors doing? Was there anybody left when you finished? What prompted you to, call it then?
We timed out, man. So you had cutoff times. You had to complete at least one loop within 30 hours. So no one even completed two loops this year. So we made it around one loop, but it took us 31 hours, so we were not able to set out for a second loop. So that's what stopped us. And yeah, like I said, no one made it around even a second loop. And the way this race works is it is, you can finish it, but everything's going to have to work perfectly in your favor. And it may take 3 or 4 years before that happens. But the important lesson that I learned out at Revenant was failure. And, it was the simplest way I can put it is I learned that if I was, I guess I got to renew my memory. And if I was afraid of failure from this point forward, mm-hmm. I would never be able to, I guess, finish this race in upcoming years. Or even accomplish other things, especially pertaining to racing in the future. Mm-hmm. So that failure ended up being a good thing because it really got to it really just retaught me that lesson that hey, you know, failure is a potential in some cases, mm-hmm. but that's okay. You can't fear it because if I fear it, I'll remain stagnant. And taking that into this last man standing race.
Yeah, let's hear about the description of it.
Yeah, the way the race works is every hour on the hour, we will run 4.16 miles. So that equates to 100 miles every 24 hours. And it continues until there's only one person left that's able to run.
What does that come out? What pace does that come out to? What pace per mile does that come out to?
A lot.
I want to say it's like a 14-minute mile, Wizard.
Okay. Go ahead. I was curious how that translates over 24 hours and how sustainable. I'm trying to put this in my head.
But the thing is you've got to finish that loop in, 50, somewhere between 50 and 55 minutes because you got to get some food in your body and you got to rehydrate before you go out on the next loop. You know, you're talking about, I would say you're going to need to average a 12, 13 minute pace, which seems very manageable mm-hmm. until you've been running for freaking 150 miles. It gets kind of complicating after that. But yeah, what we're going to do out here, man, is Brandon, my teammate, mm-hmm. that we talked about earlier, you know, I had this idea for this format. I'm going to run the first 24 hours or the first 100 miles for myself. And then every hour after that, we're going to dedicate that hour to a fallen brother. Hmm. We had a little event out here of our own. Hmm. It was really a training event to, I guess, prepare us for this race. And we invited some people out. We had 12 or 15 runners, and we dedicated each hour to a fallen brother, and it didn't necessarily have to be a SEAL. Just, we allowed other people that came out to submit slides of brothers that they had in their time in service. Hmm. Yeah, it was so powerful, man. And like after that event, I wanted to post something online, you know, on social media about it, just to kind of tell what we were blessed enough to be able to do that day. But it was so hard for me to even post anything about it because I knew there was nothing that I could say to do it any justice. It was just so powerful to for everyone there to hear those guys' names and to hear their stories and to go out and spend an hour just reflecting upon that man, that fallen brother, and his story and his family, and sharing stories. If it was a guy that you knew and you were running that lap for that guy that you knew, one of your brothers, sharing those stories with the other people out on the course along that lap, man, it was just unbelievable.
What a great experience. Yep. It's like a meditation on their memory.
Right.
I love that.
Every time you do it.
I love that.
Keeps them alive. That way, yep. If you tell that story and somebody else tells it, then their memory never dies, right? Their spirit's with you forever. So that's the cool part. That's why I always got up. I mean, I spent the first part of that just making sure everybody remembered who was downrange.
Yep.
So
I boil it down to two things, Wizard. There's two options. There's only two outcomes. I'm either going to break my body or I'm going to achieve victory. And when you simplify it that way, it's easy, man.
I dig it.
That's it. I mean, that's why we don't ever train for defeat. We only go one way. I mean, everything else in front of you is an obstacle. It's a test to make sure you're paying attention. And, you know, the risk and reward, it's all in chaos and pain. It's all a matter of perspective who's going through it. But it's what you see in front of you. And then your ability to just, man, it doesn't matter what they throw at me, man. I'm just going to keep going. I'm going to keep going.
Amen to that.
And you're probably going to get both of those anyways. You're going to break yourself. Well, whether you win or not, you'll probably be broken either way, right?
Yeah. I'll definitely be broken. I mean, you can't run. I mean, how do you train to run forever? I mean, there's no really way to train for that. It truly is a mindset and boiling it down in your own mind to saying, I'm going to go until my body, I have a catastrophic failure. Or we achieve victory. But yeah, your body will be broken regardless in some way, shape, or form.
Well, this is super cool, the combination of, I think what you're doing is you're giving reason to people's running as opposed to, well, this is entertaining. And yes, there are some people out there who are entertained by challenge and suffering, which there will be plenty of that. But I think that additional elements that you're giving meaning to it, and that means a lot. So,
yeah.
Well, when we go to wrap things up around here, you about ready for that, Marcus? You got?
I can listen to him talk all day. I mean,
what we usually like to do is
it reminds me of my Ken. I don't get to see very much with that accent of his, man. You don't have any idea how many redneck family I got in my tucked back way. Only you see.
So we should bring them all on here sometime.
Every time he talks, I just think it's like a holiday. I'm at Thanksgiving or something. And just. It's the only time we get to see him.
Well, what we like to do before we sign off with the guests is ask them for a couple points of advice, a couple things to leave us with here at the end. It can be related to what we've talked about thus far or not at all, but just things that have served you well, whether they're wisdoms, little sayings, things that have particular significance to you that you would like to leave with the listeners?
Yeah, man. And I just briefly go over what we talked about is, don't ever fear that failure, man, because it'll keep you stagnant in life. Two is don't be afraid to reach out and to lean on your brother, you know, and on that man that's whoever that is that's important to you in your life when you're going through this stuff. Don't be afraid of that fire, man, and expect it when you're going into something, whether it's business or whether it's a marriage or relationship or you know, even a hobby, and you're moving forward with it. Don't be afraid of that fire, and know that it's probably going to come. And when it does come, embrace it, and realize what you're going to be like, and how it's going to purify you on the other end.
Amen. All those points. That's all good stuff.
Good job, brother. Thank you again for sharing your wisdom over here.
You're
the man. Keep us posted on that race too, man, so we can toss up your scores. But God, man, keep running, bro. Because the more you run, the more knowledge you can drop on all of us. The more prophetic you get. God bless you, man. You're a great man. Thank you for doing this.
Well, thank you, Marcus. And I tell you, man, thank you so much for your support, man, and the donation that you made to our team. You know, that's helped us tremendously, not only giving me time to really focus on training, but just from a logistical aspect of getting Brandon out there and, all that stuff, gear. I mean, it's just, I was blown away when you did that, man.
You're
totally
welcome.
Blew me away. So
you're welcome. We got an amazing crew around here. You're not even gonna believe it runs around this house back here. It's something. I can't stress enough how out of all of us, I'm the luckiest. We were lucky marrying these women. I can't believe it. Sometimes I walk around this house like, this is ridiculous. I can't even believe this. It's hilarious.
Amen to that, brother.
Yep. All right. Well, we're out of here, man. Enjoy your day.
All right, buddy. Thanks for your time. Hope to run into you down the road here again sometime.
Sounds good, gentlemen. Thank y'all very much. I'll talk to y'all soon.
Bye-bye. All right. Take care.
All right, let's get back to Chad. Good job, brother. I always enjoy having our guys like that on here, man. And I every time I had dude open his mouth, I remember it made me think about some of my kin I don't get to see very much. So that was awesome. Good job, brother, on all of it. Team, from the start to the finish, that was truly something else, man. I know people take a lot from that. Another one of our ultra runner guys. I tell you, man, that flame that burns inside of them is jet blue.
Just another teammate that's out there doing some incredible things. I mean, God, we got them all over the place doing all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, they never slow down. It's awesome.
Right?
Yeah, truly a blessing to have around, man. I could listen to that dude talk for days. So thank you again for coming out here and doing that, brother.
Yeah, can't be said enough. In his points of advice, the one that really stuck with me was expect and embrace that fire.
Yeah, it's coming, right? You got to use, embrace it. Embrace the suck. You know, there's all the sayings that we had coming up, and those were there for a reason to make sure that we got in when we got into those situations that we knew those phrases to keep us on point, right? It's funny. You hear all that stuff when everyone's saying it around you and you're not picking it up, and then all of a sudden it starts making sense when you're going through your trials, because you never know when those things are going to drop on you, right? And that's why it's so important to have teammates and everybody, people who love you and are willing to do anything for you around you. They'll guide you through everything. He's a prime example of how far you can come with a little or nothing.
For sure. So one last time, let's mention, when we get it right this time, Bob's Big Timber Backyard Ultra. It's coming up on May 4th.
That's better.
And even though, congratulations, the race registration is closed because it's full. Now it's a success in its first year. Probably means it's definitely going to be there next year. So start training now. You'll be able to enter. If you want to follow along, go to, it's going to be Chad's Instagram account. Now it's CHADWRIGHT 278. So Chad Wright 278. They'll be putting, every hour that they're running out there, who is dedicated to the progress race, go out there, check it out, follow along. I know I'm going to be doing it. They're actually running it up there in Ohio, which out west of where I grew up, not too far. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Interesting. So let's do a little housekeeping, then we'll do a listener story. So how do you listen to the show? You can stream it directly from our website at tnqpodcast.com. And if you don't go there, you can find it on virtually any other podcast app, whether it's iPhone or Android, something like iTunes, Stitcher, Podyssey, CastBox, Radio Republic.
Find us on social media at Team Never Quit. Find and allow all major social media outlets. On Instagram, it's TNQ Podcast. You can find me at Marcus Luttrell. You can find the wizard, the underscore wizard, underscore TNQ.
All right. And we at TNQP, along with the Wise Company, want to take a moment to talk to you about being reasonably self-sufficient. There is what seems to be a continuous stream of natural disasters in the news: hurricanes, tornadoes, floods, wildfires, power outages, freak snowstorms. Well, ask yourself a simple question and be completely honest. If you were without these basic services for a period of time, 3 days, a week, 2 weeks, maybe more, without access to drinking water, food, heat, emergency services, would you be reasonably capable of attending to these crucial needs? Could you take care of yourself and your family without electrical power, the local supermarket, water utility, police and fire personnel for security? Well, if not, taking a big step in the right direction is easy. With Wise Emergency Foods, simple and affordable freeze-dried food for emergency preparedness and outdoor use. Give yourself the peace of mind knowing you're prepared with plenty of emergency food for a shelf life of up to 25 years. When you find yourself stuck in an emergency situation, Wise Emergency Food can save the day. All you need is 4 cups of water. It doesn't even have to be hot. You can take the contents of the pouch, you just pour them right in the water, you stir, cover, that's it. In 15 minutes, it's ready to go for your family no matter the situation. You know it's responsible to be prepared for your family's sake, but who has the time to do the research and planning to truly prepare? Now you don't have to, because Wise Company has made being prepared a simple click away. Wise makes it simple to get prepared for whatever comes next. Now this week, our listeners can get a 1 month grab-and-go emergency food kit at 50% off at wisefoodstorage.com/TNQP or by calling 855-475-3082. And the shipping is free. This kit includes 2 easy-to-carry buckets full of emergency food and 1 survival backpack loaded up with food and gear. Now, Wise has a 90-day, no-questions-asked return policy, so there's no risk in taking the initiative to get yourself and your family more prepared today. That's wisefoodstorage.com/TNQP and save 50% off 1 month grab-and-go emergency food kit. All right, and a little bit more about tnqpodcast.com, where we've got everything we've ever done, other than the things we're not proud of. You can listen to everybody. Yeah, amen. Everybody from David Goggins to Mike Rowe to Captain Charlie Plum, Mark Wahlberg, Sir Robert Young Pelton, Laird Hamilton, tons of...
Everybody from board shorts to boardroom suits, man. We've had astronauts to athletes. We got them.
We got them there. You're looking for somebody who's been through something difficult that that you can identify with. We promise you they're there.
Yeah.
And if not, if you don't find somebody there, I guarantee one of the listeners who keep coming back to the show, that we're so fortunate to have, who have written and shared one of their own stories and contributed to the community, you'll find something there. You can find that going, again, tnqpodcast.com. Go under a menu tab called Share Your Story. You'll be able to submit your own or read literally hundreds of others. And we got one right now, right, Marcus?
Yep, we do. This one's from David. My big sister Juanita died last month. Sorry for your loss, brother.
Yeah.
She suffered from depression and committed suicide. I have dedicated my running to raise awareness for suicide prevention. I've been listening to the TNQ podcast, show number 8 and number 35, the David Goggins podcast, has given me the tools and guidance to enter the ultramarathon runner's world. He can do that. He has an uncanny ability to do that.
He's going to have more now with Chad.
Right? I just turned 51 this month. 3 years ago, I was fat, lazy, and void of energy. I told myself I had to do something about it. I weighed almost 240 pounds. I joined a gym and started working out for many hours a day. Every day, competing in a weight loss challenge at work. I won the challenge, and now I am at 172 pounds. Nice work, man. You were listening to Goggins. That's a huge drop.
Yeah, it is.
I listen to David Goggins videos and podcasts while I run daily. It helps me stay focused on never quitting. I went on a crazy run after hearing podcast number 8. I took his advice to cut out all the ways to quit. I drove my dad's car to the Austin South Terminal Airport around 10:30 p.m., and I started running towards San Marcos, about 36 miles away. I had to run in the darkness, alone and in an area I wasn't familiar with. I listened to the podcast, number 8 and number 35, for the next 36 miles. This is the farthest I had run up to this point and previously completing a Corpus Christi marathon earlier in the year. Yesterday, I decided to run an unassisted marathon in McAllen, Texas in 102-degree heat. I completed my run in 6 hours and 55 minutes. The feeling of completion was amazing. I am training to run in the Habanero 100. My sister would have been 52 on August 11th. My goal next year is to run the Badwater, 135 milers. I have no excuse to not do it. I am in excellent health. I don't drink alcohol, no drugs, no medications, and no physical limitations. I will run at least 100 miles a week to train. I have been doing sauna training to get acclimated to the heat. I want to previously thank Marcus, the Wizard, and David for your service. This podcast is awesome. Well, brother, good luck, man, on your race. We know you do well. That's a great undertaking. And, you know, like I said, it takes those trials in our life to put us on the path that we're supposed to go. Sometimes you're going to have to walk and be the man that you're not to become the man that you are. And that's okay. That's what life's all about. So great job on being a living example of that. And you and hey, brother Chad, thanks again for doing this, man, and for all the hard work and dedication you put in throughout the years, man. People will be learning a lot from you and looking to you for a while. So thank you again for doing this, and thanks to everybody who keeps bringing us back.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we couldn't do this without you guys, man. Like, thank God, Lord Jesus, for everything, our families, friends, and again, most importantly, to our listeners. We're out.
Out.
Dear TNQ podcast listeners and teammates, it is with great regret that my time at the Team Never Quit podcast has come to an end. My experience in serving our loyal listeners has been a true blessing, and the personal reward I feel from knowing how many wonderful people we have helped is beyond words. All I can say to you is thank you from the bottom of my heart. For 3.5 years, Marcus, the Wizard, and I have poured thousands of hours into creating some of the most positive, educational, and inspiring content available in media today. From day one, I've prayed that if we could help just one person through a difficult time, then we would be accomplishing our mission. To date, I believe we have enabled hundreds of thousands to face adversity and overcome obstacles by utilizing the wide variety of never quit mindsets described in personal and sometimes intimate accounts from our phenomenal guests. I am grateful to all our guests for having the courage and compassion to share their amazing stories. I have certainly learned much about the human condition because of their brave exploits. Over the last few years, I've come to realize the two most precious resources we have in our lives are family and time. For the past 23 years, I have been sacrificing these ideals in pursuit of serving the greater good in order to explore, research, and experience the human condition. Due to my current situation, I've decided to make my time with my family my main priority. In order to better prepare my 4 daughters for their greatest never quit moments, I need to be as present as possible. I would like to thank the Westwood One Podcast Network for believing in the inspiring content of our podcast. Their professional support has been truly appreciated. Thank you to Andrew and Kara at Beefy Marketing for your effort in supporting our mission. Thank you to everyone who has been a part of Team Never Quit over my entire time there, especially Josie. To Melanie, thank you for inviting me to be a part of Team Never Quit and for the use of your home to serve so many. Wizard, thank you for the countless hours spent producing and contributing to the show on so many levels. The journey with you has been one of real personal growth and professional development. Marcus, my brother, thank you for everything. What you represent to the world is profound. What I have learned from you is that survival is much more than an isolated experience. Survival is something we must engage in each and every day of our lives. And the gift of survival should be shared with as many souls willing to listen as possible. You have opened your home, your family, your friends, your business, and most importantly, yourself to me. For that, I am eternally grateful. I believe that the truest form of ourselves lives deep down the rabbit holes. And if you're not willing to explore those dark and sometimes brilliant places, then we will never really understand who we are and why we are here. I will always love and cherish our time together searching. God bless you, those you love, and all those who love you. To all, your grateful servant, David Rutt Rutherford.
Never quit. Team never quit. Team never quit.